You're about to listen to Perfume on the Radio, a periodic radio show and podcast where we explore the world through the lens of scent.
Smells good, Mom.
Make any space the space. Whiffers.
Do you suffer from scent aesthesia?
This is Perfume on the Radio. Tune in just stereo. This is Perfume on the Radio on Lookout FM.
You're listening to Perfume on the Radio on Lookout FM.
I've never cared much about cars. They're useful, they facilitate some nice road trips, but beyond that, who cares? Recently, however, my husband bought and started fixing up a 67 Chevy Nova, and I have become completely immersed in car culture. This interest and immersion coincided with COVID, where my anxiety was manifesting as a strange and uncharacteristic fear of driving on the highway. I took surface streets everywhere. Visiting my dad about 20 miles south used to be 35 minutes down the freeway. Now it meant a torturous 1.5-hour drive through the entirety of Los Angeles. Suffice to say, I've gotten really intimate with the interior of my car, and I'm really tired of driving. At the same time, I've developed a sort of car crush, the first of my life. The object of my affection is the Mercedes-Benz Pagoda SL. This is a two-seat roadster that was introduced at the 1963 Geneva Car Convention. My current car, a 2012 Scion XB, garnished with lurid patches of smudge, a cracked bumper, and a lot of wear, smells like cigarettes, day-old coffee, and somehow always like an overripe banana. I have no idea why. My Pagoda, however, would smell phenomenal. Sweet and spiced like cognac, rich and comfortable like cigar smoke in the wind, powdered, round, and waxy like vintage lipstick. I'm super into it. Or maybe I'm just super into who I think I'll be if I were to drive it. Now, with gas prices topping out at almost $8 a gallon here in Los Angeles, Pagodas being sold for up to $110,000 on the internet, and our planet in a crisis that is definitively not helped by these fuel burners, I may just have to abandon this little fantasy of mine. Maybe I'll just make a Saskia in a Pagoda-inspired perfume, spray it while I look at photos of my little crush on the internet, and imagine a world in which Mercedes-Benz Pagodas were affordable and electric. In episode 4 of season 2 of Perfume on the Radio, we explore the complicated olfactory world of cars. We're calling this episode The Automa Show. My name is Saskia Wilson Brown, and I'm super happy to be here. Let's get driving. I live in a neighborhood in Northeast Los Angeles where the car culture is rich. There are periodic cruises where people show off their lowriders, and several people on my block are in the process of restoring vintage cars. So I thought to start this episode in my own backyard. Well, more specifically, in my neighbor's mother-in-law's backyard. Pedro Nunez is a gregarious truck driver and the honorary mayor of my neighborhood. Micah Hahn is my husband, a kind-hearted designer, and Pedro's very best friend. He is also, like Pedro, a huge car enthusiast. I interrupted a very busy day of work for them to attempt to record some impressions they had about smell. Like many of the conversations that take place in my neighborhood, this interview is in a sort of Spanish-English hybrid. Commence the reportage. Well, I'm coming here to check out the Highland Park Car Club. Micah and Pedro, as they work on Micah's 1967, I think, Chevy Nova, and Pedro's 1970-something Chevy Nova.
It's okay.
Yeah, there's more, little pieces. Okay. That one, you can save it, but later maybe you need it.
Está bien. Yeah, sí, sí.
Just little by little.
Yeah.
What are you guys doing?
Oh, putting in some gauges.
Oh, that was a lot of work.
Yeah, I
can. Pero, mire cómo lo hizo. You can do
wow.
It. Excelente, Micah. Hey, I remember when we started.
I'm learning.
Yeah.
When we started the mechanic, no sabía nada.
Sí, sí, sí.
Oh, now? Solo
esto.
¿Qué es esto?
Distributor.
Ah, and the carburetor.
Yeah, carburetor.
This
is a coil.
And that makes the car run?
Yes. Yeah. That makes the spark plugs fire.
So what are we smelling? Are there any smells that you guys are noticing right now?
Well,
oh, yeah. I'm smelling Micah's fingers, and it's like metallic.
and oil.
And definitely oily, but mostly I'm getting metallic. Mm-hmm. What happens when cars go wrong? What do you smell when cars go wrong?
Depends on what it is. Could be oil smoke coming out of the exhaust pipe. It's like a white smoke, which is a very bad thing.
But what does it smell like?
Kind of like gasoline.
Oh, and are there any, what about when brakes go wrong?
Oh, that's like a metallic, or like a metallic smell?
Now I'm putting some coolant. Oh, wow. The first thing I smelled was orange for some reason. It's an unusual smell. It smells synthetic.
Let me smell.
It smells like an orange.
Soapy. It's got a soapy note.
Soapy.
Oh, it's fluorescent green. Yeah. Wow. It looks like a Gatorade.
Oh, this one's red. Oh, the same. It smells the same.
Yeah, sort of
it's
like...
It's lo mismo, no?
Yeah. Hey, Micah, you know what?
What?
That was the more better than the other one. That one he used for the trucks. He said, I told the mechanic, why you have it the different colors?
Uh-huh.
He said, for the trucks, for the ice. For the ice.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
he can frost in that one.
It won't freeze.
Oh, wow. Do old cars smell different from new cars?
Oh, yeah. They smell kind of like alive because there's a lot of organic things like rubber and oil.
Yeah.
And it's weird. It brings back a lot of memories for me.
Oh, really? Did you know that scent's tied to memory? What
is that true?
Yeah.
Oh, being a child and
old cars.
Yeah, old cars.
There is a very distinct smell that's definitely tied to childhood, I think. These old engines and heat. They smell hot when they're running, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm going to go into your car and smell the inside.
Okay.
So inside the car, we have some leather smells. Actually, it's not really leather. It's more like dusty vinyl. What I'm looking at is a whole bunch of tools on the ground. And really, it's dusty. It smells like dusty and like old grease. And I don't know, old cars. It's a very distinctive smell. Pedro, do you ever think about smell when you're working on cars?
What do you mean?
Do you ever think about smell?
No.
No?
I smell, you know?
Okay. I am trying to drag it out of you guys, I do admit.
You see the other car too?
Yeah, is that your Chevy Nova? Your 74?
73.
Does it work?
Yeah, that was the tank, the fuel tank.
Oh, that's what we're going to spray paint.
Yeah, under here.
What is it about Chevys that you guys like so much?
They're more easy for mechanics.
To fix.
Yeah, they're easier to work on, and a lot of the parts are interchangeable.
Right.
And there's a lot of aftermarket parts.
Uh-huh. So it's just easier generally.
Yeah.
I go next. I get to work on this.
Nice. All right, honey. I love you.
I love you, too.
I'll see you later.
Yeah.
Hasta luego, Pedro.
Okay. Good to see you.
Nos vemos pronto.
Okay, bye.
Special thanks to Pedro Nunez and Micah Hahn for letting me tag along as they rebuilt the insides of Micah's Chevy Nova. My next guest, like Micah and Pedro, is an inveterate tinkerer. He loves cars and he loves to mess around with their engines. Daniel Krasovsky is a perfumer who runs his company Lab DK with an emphasis on healing and on storytelling. I started our chat asking Daniel about his car, which has recently been on a visit to a friendly mechanic. So, hey, how's your car this morning?
It technically went in to the mechanic yesterday, and I have not heard back from my associate yet.
And you're driving a replacer right now, a rent-a-wreck, I believe, right?
I am currently driving a Nissan that is questionable at best.
So let's start there. Are there any, when you got the car, the replacer car, I know that you were quite shocked at sort of the appearance. What about the smell? Did you notice any smells in this car?
It was surprising. It was filled with smoke. It was filled with must. There's questionable marks on the ceiling of potentially chocolate or blood. I'm not sure. One of the things that I noticed first off is that the air recycling switch was turned to recycling and not fresh air. So it was continually recycling this foul stench. And I switched it over to the fresh, and it does make a world of difference. So if anybody takes anything out of this, switch it over to fresh air and change the cabin filter.
Cabin filters have a lot to do with how the car smells and the air quality. Is that right?
It does. It really does. It is the filter that filters the air that comes from the outside of the vehicle to the inside of the vehicle. So it stops dust, it stops smog, leaves, flowers, pollen, all of it.
Wow.
If it's not replaced, it builds up and it creates a pretty foul experience inside of a car.
So actually, on the topic of foul experiences, you have right now a rental or a loaner car because your own car is in the shop. And I know that you've had your share of car troubles in the past couple of years. So do you have any scent associations with these problems? Like when they come up, do you notice a smell?
Well, I don't like to use the word troubles. Oh, I like to use the word challenges because I can learn from challenges. And I have learned a lot.
Quite a few challenges. Oh, dear.
Yeah, over the last year, I've been working on cataloging and categorizing the IAO's perfume archive. And a friend of mine was in town from New York City. And we were planning on getting together at the IAO. So I'm driving into the IAO, and all of a sudden, I get thrown back to 1993.
Ooh, very specific.
Very specific. I used to work for a company called Aveda. And back in 93, 94, we launched a candle called Moroccan River Valley. And it was rose, vanilla, beeswax. It was my favorite scent of all time, almost literally. And one of my other favorite smells is the smell of burnt. When you blow out a candle, the scent of the wick and the smoke.
Oh, man, I totally am with you on that. It's a very specific smell. It's kind of fatty, rancid, waxy.
Exactly. And the burnt, there's something about the burnt cotton and all of it working together with rose and vanilla.
Nice.
So I'm driving into the IAO and all of a sudden I start smelling Moroccan River Valley, something I haven't smelled in 25, 30 years. So it's this sweet burning, that wick type smell. I was like, okay, this is not right. Something is wrong. So I pull off the freeway. My car is now overheating and I'm seeing wafts of white smoke. And I open the hood and I see what I found out to be coolant. One of the primary ingredients in radiator coolant is ethylene glycol, which is a thick, viscous cooling substance. And when burnt, it has a sickly sweet bakery smell, with a slight floral quality to it as well. So if anybody is ever driving on the freeway and they start smelling the wafting rose valleys of Morocco, pull over.
Oh, that's such a good way of putting it. So tell me, you mentioned earlier that you were going to salvage yards periodically. So are there any sensorial impressions that you get from salvage yards?
Yeah, there's one. Salvage yards are generally located next to recycling depots, garbage collection sites, and it literally is the last spot before the car is completely disassembled, crushed, or died. Mm-hmm. It's a cacophony of scent. So the smell of dirt combined with stagnant water, garbage wafting through the air, drained fluids, a burnt smell. And one of the things that I've noticed is that when going into one of the vehicles at any of the vehicles at a salvage yard, it is an olfactory history of that person's personality.
Oh, wow.
It is a trip. So many people, especially in Southern California, spend so much time in their cars that it's either them or the air freshener or their perfumes that emanate into the fabrics, into the leather. And it is like going into their olfactory history. One of the things that blew me away is I was helping out with Spiros's class back in early 2020.
And this is the week-long intensive we do at the Institute, yeah.
Yes. And there was one particular molecule, and I've looked through my notes, can't find it. It was super sweet, thick, lactonic. It immediately brought me back to the very specific scent of the salvage yard.
So junkyards smell like milky is what I'm hearing.
It's milky, it's sweet, it's foul. But one of the things that blew me away was BMWs, Mercedes, a number of higher end vehicles, they experiment with different materials. Back in the 1990s, rubberized plastics, different types of materials that had never been used before were being integrated into higher end cars. How they age, nobody knows or nobody knew. So one of the things that I've learned from going to the salvage yard is evaluating the smell of some of these older materials. So I was at a Keith Haring exhibition of his painted cars. Mm-hmm. And there was a BMW Z1 convertible from 1990. As I walked up to it, I immediately got this wafting scent of the junkyard. And it turned out that it's the off-gassing or the decomposing, slow decomposing, of the rubber material of the dashboard, emergency brake, and of the car doors.
So what about when things are new and shiny and aren't going wrong? Like the scentscape of cars. Do you think the scentscape of a car's interior plays into how we feel when we're in the car? Like our sense of safety, or I don't know, a sense of luxury?
Well, definitely sense of luxury for sure. Brand awareness, absolutely. And I think brand mission as well, because I've had some challenges over the last couple of years. I've been in a number of loaner vehicles. Mm-hmm. I started doing scent evaluations of the vehicles, and Volvo has a very specific scent profile. So if you can imagine Sweden, cool, clean, crisp lines, the scent profile of Volvos is very much that. I did an evaluation, and it was primarily in order of what I noticed: clean, cool musks, traditional leather, a white wood, conifer, marine, mossy notes with a slight animalic, green, and aldehydic quality.
Fascinating. So do you think this is intentional on Volvo's part?
Oh, absolutely. Because I picked out like ambretolide, mm-hmm. muscone, exaltolide, habanolide, IBQ, and strangely enough, vertifix and calone. I mean, like very specifically, I could sense these molecules.
And those first ones were all basically musks. And then, IBQ has a kind of a leathery note. And then calone is specifically a scent that's often used to evoke the smell of the salty waves of the ocean. Is that right?
It is. But in contrast, I was in a couple of new Jaguars. The thing that I got the most out of it was definitely more of a warm musk, warm leather, dark wood, and spice. It was very intentional. And when it comes to molecules, it was more of cashmere and Cosmo and ISO-E super and sandalwood molecules.
Sandalwood does feel luxurious, doesn't it?
Oh, I know. Cashmere, and you can just, it's like being enveloped.
So more generally, Daniel, I mean, do you have a relationship to cars? I mean, do you have a particular interest in this? And if so, why?
My relationship has really come from just wanting to know how things work, wanting to be a professional tinkerer, and just my inquisitive nature. I love to know how things work. So going out to the salvage yard, taking things apart, putting them back together, it's a happy place.
Right.
But also when it comes to using scent from the context of art and experimentation, there's so many different facets of it, from leather to plastics to all of the fuels that just add inspiration for composition.
Mm, totally. Well, thank you for joining. I love talking to you always, and I particularly enjoy it when you delve into the MacGyver aspect of your personality, because you are, after all, the MacGyver of perfume. And maybe cars.
Yeah, at this point, yes.
At this point, yes. Those challenges have taught you well.
Yes.
That was my friend, perfumer, and inveterate observer of smells and all things automotive, the very lovely Daniel Krasovsky. You can learn more about him and his work at labdk.com. Our next guest is an old favorite of mine. Killian Wells is a pop star, entrepreneur, perfumer, and all-around kind person. Really, he's so, so nice. He's also kind of an American pop culture genius, working with the zeitgeist in ways that few other people do. Killian joined me from Texas to talk about how he has taken inspiration from cars, most notably for his perfume Zyrena 66, which was inspired by America's fabled Route 66. I started our chat asking him what it was about this particular highway that drew his attention. Here is what Killian had to say.
Well, when I had moved from New York to LA years ago, I took Route 66 for the most part. I'd always heard a lot of stuff about the historic Route 66, and I've always sort of been like really intrigued by old school Americana type stuff, like the back road culture and all that, and seeing it in movies like Psycho come to mind, like, you know, pulling over to like the Bates Motel.
Right, totally.
There's just something about being off the beaten path that's always been kind of creepy in a way, like of being, you know, so far removed, but also very exciting.
Yeah.
Like not really knowing what to expect.
Did you find that it delivered what you were hoping for?
Yeah, there were, you know, a few times where it was a little, my friend was with me and we were taking turns sleeping, and we went nonstop from Chicago to Santa Monica. So,
oh, wow.
You know, we were driving at night, and there were a few times where I remember it was like some little covered bridge at night, and we were driving over it, and someone, there was someone just standing there with like, oh. With like a lamp or something. And we just like, oh my God, what the hell is that?
That is the beginning of a horror movie, I think.
Yeah, it was, we wanted to get out of that area very quickly.
I believe it. So what about it what lent itself to you to scent? Or I guess maybe let me rephrase that. Like, how did you begin to interpret this experience with scent?
I mean, to be totally honest, the name was inspired by Route 66, but the fragrance was more, you know, inspired just by cars in general. So, gasoline is the main note of Soprano 66, and that has always been something that I have, you know, it's one of those weird things that I love the smell of, and I think that a lot of people share that. Mm-hmm. It's up there with chlorine. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it's very sharp gasoline, isn't it? It's like,
yeah.
And so what else did you put in there? So gasoline and,
you know, a little bit of leather and like a motor oil. So almost kind of like a, you know, dirty note.
And was there anything of the landscape thrown in there, or was the landscape sort of implied?
That's a bit more implied. I think the, scents of the car are, you know, it's pretty literal.
Yeah. That's cool. I mean, well, you could take that into your landscape and be in your own little version of the freeway dream.
Yeah.
What do you think the car brings to us? I mean, you said at the beginning, you're not really a car guy, and I'm not either. And yet, you know, as Americans in particular, with this massive country of ours, like the car plays a part. So what do you think that is?
I mean, I know like when I was a kid and I got my license, it brought a real sense of freedom. I used to love driving everywhere. When I was like 16, I would go and drive on like back roads and, you know, by myself, just sort of to clear my head, listen to music with the windows down, driving around. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it just gave me a sense of freedom and calm. And as I, you know, as years have gone by, I've gotten to sort of hate driving. You know, LA, living in LA played a major role in that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I still love the, you know, the whole like car culture.
What was your first car, Killian? What was the first car you had?
Oh my God. People think I'm such a dork for this. My dad bought me a car and I basically had my choice. Mm-hmm. Well, as long, you know, it couldn't be a sports car.
Good reason. Like, right. Yeah.
But I wanted a Buick Rendezvous. That's really funny. I want to say Tiger Woods was endorsing it at the time. And I'm not a big golf fan, but I think my dad liked that aspect of it because he was a big golf fan.
That's really funny. What was the car? What was it like? What did it look and smell like? I mean, do you have any memories of being a teenager in that car? Or like, I mean, my car, for instance, was like marijuana smoke and cigarettes, you know?
Well, funny enough, like I kept that car until maybe like 2 years ago.
No kidding. So, wow. Yeah,
I mean, it was, I had it for a while. It was in really good shape until it wasn't. Like it was sort of like it was great, and then one day it just like broke down, and I was all right, you know, time to get a new car. So now I drive a Suburban, which is considered like the unofficial vehicle of Texas, I guess. So they even make them here.
Is that right?
But as far as the smells, like I remember, you know, the distinct new car smell.
Right.
When I had gotten it. And I used to always use like the new car smell air fresheners to try to maintain that as a teenager. So that was, I guess, the scent that I really associate with it. But even like the new car smell air fresheners never actually, they never quite fully capture what it smells like when you get the new car.
Yeah, a couple of folks have brought up new car smell as being a particularly evocative smell for them. Mm. And everyone sort of answers differently when I ask them what they think that new car smells like. So how would you describe the new car smell?
Mm, yeah, I mean, it's sort of like a chemical smell to me, mm-hmm. a little bit of leather. Mm-hmm. I haven't really looked into it, but I know that it's some sort of like cleaner. And also, you know, obviously all of the smells of like the carpet and the seats, you know, whether they're leather or vinyl. So you're just getting sort of a combination of everything. So when you use like a new car smell air freshener, it's not really capturing every little nuance of what you're, the whole accord that you're getting.
Yeah. Is there like a car that you sort of fetishize? Like I have a car that I fetishize, which is the Mercedes-Benz 280 SL Pagoda, which is very specific. It's like a little two-seater. Mm-hmm. I have these like very specific associations with who I want to be in this fantasy car. Do you have any cars like that you fetishize, or any visions of yourself in a car that you would prefer?
I would say the only car that I have ever really, you know, like wanted is a DeLorean.
Yes.
And, you know, tricked out with some Back to the Future props. So, yeah, I mean, I think that was really the one car from a very young age that I was drawn to. Uh-huh. You know, I really like the design of it, and being like a retro guy, like that's just something I've always been into.
Yeah, it makes sense for you actually.
Yeah,
because you kind of you have the capacity to really nail that 1980s aesthetic.
Thank you.
Yeah, like some of your package design, you really nail it. So I could definitely see that.
Yeah, there's actually a DeLorean in the artwork for Zyrena 66.
Oh well, there we go.
And there's I forget what kind of car it was, but there it has the car from RoboCop.
Oh, nice. So in terms of smells, I'm thinking like LED burning. Well, I don't even know. Like, what is the smell of an LED or early 80s computer electronics? What does that smell like?
Well, I just did a fragrance that sort of has that scent to it. And it's kind of like, I don't know, to me, it's kind of like a vinyl, like a sweet, bright scent, mm-hmm. but kind of dirty at the same time. Maybe like a burning scent.
Yeah.
Like if you were to put your face up to the back of like a VCR or something, like you're getting, yeah, that kind of like dust, but the you know, plastic and like a hot, I don't know, motherboard or computer chips.
Yeah. Like a 1980s version of the future, right?
Oh, I love that. I mean, I'm so into like the retro futuristic, as they call it.
Yeah.
When I use that term, I've had a lot of people be confused. They're like, how does that make sense? Those are opposites. And I'm like, no, not really, because retrofuturism is referring to what people thought the future was going to be like back, you know, years ago.
Yeah.
You know, it's really, you know, I always think it's funny watching, you know, a movie like Blade Runner, and the filmmakers were envisioning that in the early 2000s, we were going to have, you know, flying cars, right, and things of that nature. Yet they, I guess, didn't go far enough with how they thought things were going to be. They'd be talking to someone over like a video phone, and it would be like a TV of that time.
Right.
You know, I guess no one thought we would ever have the you know, a TV that's half an inch thick.
Totally. I often think about like Dick Tracy. Do you remember Dick Tracy, that comic book?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And he had the video watch, you know, and he would sort of, and I always think of that as being a perfect example of retrofuturism, because it's come, I mean, we have that with Apple watches or whatever, yeah, but it looks so different from how they imagined it, you know? So, and also there's like the Jetsons flying cars.
Oh yeah. That, I mean, and the Jetsons was what, the 60s, I believe.
Yeah, I think so. Well, if, you know, now that you have your Suburban, what's your sort of perfect scenario for your for a smellscape when you're in your Suburban? What would you want it to smell like?
I mean, it usually just smells like whatever I'm wearing at the time. Like,
fair enough. Like,
it's usually just smelling of my fragrance of the day. But I mean, I do, I love the smell of when you have the windows down and you're sort of smelling whatever nature is outside. Like fresh cut grass is one of my favorite scents and always has been. Mm-hmm. And then as I mentioned, I oddly like the smell of gasoline or exhaust. And so, getting sort of that combination when you're on the road.
Yeah. With the wind. Are you the kind of guy, I know some perfumers and every time I go in their cars, there's like scent strips sitting in there, there's like a cacophony of what they're working on. Do you do that or?
No, I have, what you'll find when you come into my car is a bunch of straw wrappers on the floor and handful of empty water bottles that I got from my mom. You couldn't open the passenger door without a bunch of bottles flying out of it.
Well, at least you're hydrated,
Yeah. Yeah, just messy.
That was the always hydrated and always cool Killian Wells, founder and head perfumer at Zyrena. He joined us from Texas, and you can learn more about him at Zyrena.com. That's Xyrena. My next guest on this Autumn show is Pia Long. Pia is the creative director at Old Fiction, which is a fragrance consultancy firm that she started with Nick Gilbert. The twin passions of writing and fragrance have shaped Pia's life and career, but today, she joins us to talk about, guess what? Cars. Here's Pia, joining us from Salisbury in England.
I asked you to be on the show because you recently designed a perfume for a car, the Ford Mustang Mach-E. and they used it to scent the interior of the car during a festival called the Goodwood Festival of Speed. So first of all, what is the Goodwood Festival of Speed? I'm not familiar with it.
So there's a place called Goodwood House in UK. And so it's sort of a garden party / racing motorhead event. And they race up a hill. Simultaneously, they also have exhibitions and you can go and talk to people who work with formula cars and any kind of race cars. It's very popular and the tickets aren't that cheap. It's kind of a really sort of posh way of celebrating love of speed and cars and motorsports.
So when it came to the Ford Mustang Mach-E, what was the creative brief that they provided for you when they asked you to design this scent?
Honestly, the brief didn't really go into describing the scent more than that it needed to evoke petrol and old cars for people who were then going to be driving an electric vehicle and felt that there was a key piece missing from their motoring experience. Where's the smell? If you are an enthusiast and if you're going to buy a sports car as your first electric vehicle, then in fact, yes, it's a valid point. And so it was a sort of a interesting challenge because you had to take something that was supposed to be kind of clickbait a little bit and a bit of a can we get motorsport journalists to cover this? Can we get social media coverage? And then you had to connect that with the fact that there were actual people going to be in the actual festival of speed and going into a car scented with this, and they had to enjoy the experience.
Yeah, and it's particularly challenging because you're engaging in something that when people are into it, they are really into
really
it. So you really have to nail that smell. How did you go about starting to think about what the smell should and could be?
Well, first of all, of course, if you used actual benzene or actual things that smell of actual petrol, then their properties would be toxic to inhale.
Right.
So you wouldn't be able to use the exact ingredients. And I did explain this back to them to say, I'm going to have to do something that's a kind of a stars in your eyes, smell-alike version, not the actual smell of petrol, because you are going to poison people. And then furthermore, of course, you have to make it, I believe, a pleasant experience for everybody. Then again, as you say, there has to be that authenticity. So I took the smell of rubber, the smell of pleather and leather, the smell of smoke, and not just the smell of rubber, by the way, but that smell of kind of you've just melted it a little bit against asphalt. And then by pure coincidence, and I love when this happens, literally about a day before I got that brief, I just finished that book, Nosedive, which in one chapter describes that in new car interiors, the sort of the plastic parts emit benzaldehyde, which actually has that kind of slightly alarming, almost petrol-y smell in overdose. And I thought, aha, well, here's the trunk of my fragrance. So I built the whole fragrance around benzaldehyde. And it, then the whole thing kind of just suddenly came together very, very fast, because you're, it's very easy then to build the idea of rubber into that using lots of vanilla resins. I also used overdose of ginger oil, which in high dosage has a very unpleasant rubbery top note, which normally perfumers try to disguise. But in this case, I thought I want that burnt rubber. And similarly, pink pepper has a petrol top note in overdose. And so I overdosed pink pepper. And then I sort of put in a few little in-jokes that also helped to build the smoke and the dirt and the asphalt and the whole character of the fragrance. I put in paracresol, which is an interesting material because it smells like dirty engines on its own. But then it's also found in ylang ylang. And it's also found in horse urine.
I was going to say, there's a definite horsiness to paracresol.
There is. You
know? Yeah, and, yeah.
And of course, the Mustang, couldn't help myself.
It's a horse. Yeah.
it's a horsey fragrance.
That's awesome. Did they get the joke?
I don't think so.
No.
But I was so pleased with it. You know, this is kind of sometimes dangerous if you let perfumers do what they want. So the overall experience is a little bit like petrol and cars, old cars by sonar. So you kind of sort of working around the topic in a way that will trigger those scent memories, but isn't literal, because that would be rather unpleasant and toxic and acrid. And so, you know, it ended up being actually a fragrance that a lot of people got so obsessed with that after the festival, we got a few emails begging for us to send them a sample. I'm sure some people were disappointed that it wasn't literally like huffing a petrol pump, but
well, I mean, you can also go and just huff a petrol pump if you want, you know, I mean,
I don't know. And also I think there's something wrong with your car if you're sitting in your car and it smells like huffing a petrol pump.
So. For sure. How do you relate to that instinct for people who want photorealistic scents? I mean, perfumery, it can be sort of a trickster, like you can sort of replicate real things, but also there's an aspect of artistry that shouldn't be disregarded.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think a part of your fragrance can be photorealistic. So you come in and it's so real that you sort of get a bit startled. But then I don't think it necessarily should be the be-all and end-all if you're making a fragrance rather than a replica of something. For many, many reasons, I'm imagining in museums to scent a particular exhibit, or in education, it might be really cool to have photorealistic things. But if you're talking about wearable art, or if you're talking about even design, beware of trying to be too literal, because actually then you end up in territory where people who really are obsessed with, let's say, strawberry, and you've attempted to make the most photorealistic strawberry in the world, people will critique it to death because they think, no, that's not right, and that's not right at all. And everyone's personal experience of that thing that they love is going to then be ruined.
I also feel like people walk around with these sort of platonic ideas of what something smells like. You know, everyone thinks they know exactly what green grass smells like. But oftentimes when you're actually in that thing, really observing it, doesn't smell like what you think it smells like. So yeah, it's dangerous, as you say, you know.
This is sometimes the mistake, especially novice perfumers can make, is that if a client requests a bluebell or hyacinth or something like that, which actually, when you really smell it, they're not entirely pleasant. You know, there's things there that can be quite, you know, severe. There's fantasy and there's reality. And ironically, you can get the most hyperreal experience for person experiencing a fragrance if you add a little bit of magic to it, so you didn't quite make it entirely literal. That's hard.
So when you're designing for things that are meant to be put on the skin and worn versus a functional type perfume, are there different considerations you bear in mind?
Of course. I mean, you know, the skin itself is a medium, and so having a personal scent on you has a very different dimension to having it around you. When you're scenting environments, I think the thing that a lot of companies and brands sometimes don't consider is the difference between sniffing something like a diffuser or candle briefly and thinking that's lovely, or whether you want to exist in that space for an hour or more. Often I think when people scent environments, they forget the person. Just think this environment ought to smell like this, and isn't this cool, or isn't this refreshing, or isn't this powerful? And you actually forget that people have to exist in that space.
That was Pia Long, creative perfumer at Ole Fiction. To learn more about Pia and her work, check out olefiction.com. So we've covered older cars quite a bit. Now I want to talk about the next and the new. And to that end, our next guest is Nick Kurczewski. Nick is a writer who specializes in the automotive industry, and his writing has taken him to India to cover taxis, to Europe, where he drove anything from a Porsche that spit flames to museum pieces that barely moved. I learned about Nick on the strength of a fantastic article he wrote for Car and Driver about the new car smell, and I started our chat asking him what it was about new car smell that so many people liked so much. Here's what he had to say.
Well, during that story, one of my interviewees made a very good point. New car smell, you could compare it to, well, she compared it to opening up a new laptop or stepping into a clean hotel room. That part of it is just the shiny, new, fresh aspect of it. It's yours. It's kind of untouched. It's, I guess, even a sense of accomplishment that new car smell means, obviously, a little redundant, but you have a new car and the pride that brings. The reality of what you're smelling isn't quite as romantic sometimes. The term off-gassing was not something I was familiar with before starting the story. But that came into play in the more technical side of what exactly are we smelling.
But what is off-gassing for people who might not know?
Off-gassing is basically just the venting of chemical smells. It's the seat fabric. It's safe to say primarily plastic parts, many petroleum-based products in a new vehicle have this off-gassing that happens. In fact, you know, it's worth pointing out, some people can be very allergic to this, or it can affect them. So, while most people, it's easy to say new car smell is great and people love it, it can have a negative side effect in some folks, dizziness or nausea. So that is something there is such a thing as too much off-gassing. You don't want to be breathing in these chemical fumes. Now, the good thing with new car smell is many engineers have spent many hours, days, years making sure this isn't something that's overpowering. So new car smell itself typically lasts a couple, 2, 3, 4 weeks at most. Mm-hmm. And then those materials, they're not as new, and the off-gassing tapers down considerably.
So it's something that they consider then, obviously, the engineers.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The automakers I spoke with have studies. They have blind sampling. They have people throughout their company, not just in one, you know, rigid, we smell the car interior section. They want a wide cross section. And it does factor into even something like a JD Power quality survey. But the list of questions and whatnot, it's about 200 different categories. So smell being one of 200, but it's still there. It's still a consideration.
And JD Power, for people who don't know, is what is that?
I guess you could say car research.
Okay.
And quality survey. They're most famous for their quality surveys, initial quality survey and dependability ratings and whatnot. But again, they in their research, they take into account so many factors. I mean, you think how complex a car is now. It's more computer than engine. I was actually very surprised because I thought I was familiar with how they went about their business, but I never, ever considered car smell would be one of even 200 factors when people respond, like what they like or don't like about a vehicle.
Crazy. Yeah. Wow. Amazing. I didn't think people cared about it or thought about it really. Yeah. So what are the aromatic components, as far as you know, more or less, of that new car smell? As you said, you mentioned plastics and leathers. And
yeah, I mean, I guess if you're spending Bentley or Rolls-Royce levels of money, you're going to be smelling more of the thick pile wool carpeting and that rich leather aroma. And so that's definitely a different experience than stepping into, say, a new Honda Civic, which is still a lovely little car, much more affordable. But then you'll be smelling more plastics, vinyl, various adhesives, which are still present even in a luxury car. But again, it really depends on, you know, the scale of the vehicle, the seating, and various other things. The experiences do vary from model to model, but it's still something that generally people enjoy. Not everyone, though, which is something I was surprised about.
You mentioned the different qualities of cars, and you said, for instance, Bentley and Rolls-Royce, you'd be smelling more the rich carpet and et cetera. Do you think that the smell is one of the components that conveys luxury for those manufacturers? Do you think they think about it in those terms?
For a Bentley or a Rolls-Royce client, I think it's safe to say yes, because it's a little more of a stately cruiser. It's more about comfort and speed and prestige and whatnot. But I can say, having been lucky enough to have a job where I can say I've sat in a few Lamborghinis and Ferraris, the sportier side of that equation, I'd say that it's more about the looks, the performance. And I don't think anyone's going to be maybe sniffing the interior of a Ferrari as much as they might a Rolls Royce. Right. I can't say that for everyone, but a Ferrari, while it's still a very gorgeous interior, it's less that traditional wood, leather, opulent experience. It's a bit more, well, like a racing car, driver focused.
Right.
And it's safe to say that kind of the more stately ultra luxury brands will probably push that more traditional leather and thick carpeting olfactory experience, so to speak.
Do you know of any companies that are designing scent systems for the car experience?
Yes, Mercedes and BMW, and I'm sure there's others that I'm missing, have what they, I think, routinely call diffusers. The last one I experienced was in a Mercedes. It was a few years ago, though, but it was located in the glove box, and you would have what looked like almost a small perfume vial that you'd slot into place. I think they offered, to start, maybe a half dozen different scents that were, again, just as easy as, oh my God, I'm dating myself. I was going to say a CD or a cassette to take in or out.
It's okay, but, I'm with you, dude.
Yeah, plug in a USB, let's say. And I'm sure they've expanded the range. It's subtle. I forget exactly which scent was in the car that I had, but it wasn't some, like, all of a sudden someone who was reeking of cologne got into the vehicle.
Right,
nothing. It was very under the radar. And some were more in tune to keep you alert. Some were more attuned to help you relax. I guess it's kind of like tea. You know, if you want a nice little jolt of energy, people would go more for mint. Whereas for sleepy time, it's more chamomile. That was kind of the same with the diffused scent system. Something a little spicier and sportier would be the energetic one, and something a little, oh, I don't know, maybe more sandalwood, something along those lines would be the relaxation one.
Did you find that it enhanced your experience of the car, or was it sort of like whatever?
I remember with that particular car driving through the Holland Tunnel, and I turned everything off because between the heated and cooled seats, I think I had it heated. It was wintertime, and a massage seat, and then the diffuser, I started to nod off.
No.
I think it was more the seat massagers than the scent of the car.
Oh, that's not a good thing. Yeah.
Not something that happens often, but that did stand out, that I got way too into relaxation mode. So yeah, well, it was very calming, maybe a little too much so, but not to say these things are unsafe. And when they say it's calming or it gives you energy, it's marketing. It's like, will that energy drink really make you a super athlete and power you through the day?
Right.
Probably not.
So the reason I'm doing an episode on cars is that my husband recently got a 67 Chevy Nova, right? And it's like, he just has become a total car person. So one of the things that he enjoys about these old cars that he works on is there's a degree of physicality with the oils and the greases, and they all carry smells. Mm-hmm. And then you take that and you compare it to, for instance, the Canoe, which I saw recently at the LA car show, obviously a fully modern electric, you know, I don't even know if it's a car anymore. It's like a pod. I guess what I'm trying to say is, do you think there is an evolution of smell with the cars themselves?
I think the evolution of car smells taken as a whole, absolutely. Electrics simply don't have the same moving parts that a piston driven engine would, especially with classics. If you stand outside, you know, mid 60s muscle car or whatnot, you're going to breathe in a lot of gas. And also, there were different materials used, and as they age, you know, they kind of take on a different life. Just generally speaking, I think that's one of the reasons people love classics, not only the looks and the more visceral driving experience, but they literally smell different, you know, from even newer gasoline-powered cars, which are much cleaner and kinder to the environment. There is something to be said about punching the gas in an old-school 1960s muscle car, and you know it from the sound and the smell, and if you're behind the wheel from just the vibrations. Yeah, it's all part of the experience.
If we could design a smell for the new generation of EVs that would help situate it as a different but equally interesting and good thing, what would that smell be?
Yeah, I guess especially if you take the next leap and talk about totally self-driving electric cars, like when your car can drive everywhere all the time and you're just a passenger, you know, does the car turn into a mobile spa? You know, like, do you want the smell of eucalyptus or diner fries? I don't know. It really, you know, the sky's the limit. Right now, I think some critiques of EVs are that they still basically have the general shape of a traditional car. There's a lot of potential in the design of EVs to break the mold. I know some electric car companies or electric cars are toying with the idea of you can put in whatever engine sound you want. Now it's artificial, but if you want the Jetsons little boop, 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 jet or whatever you wanted to call it, or the sound of a Ferrari or something, horses galloping, I guess, as long as it's
legal.
That'd
be amazing.
You know, you could do that. So it makes sense that scent could be just as easily and equally manipulated and made to suit modern EVs and the next generations of vehicles. One side note, it's funny that the appreciation of new car smell has changed dramatically in a short time. It was only maybe 12 to 14 years ago. I believe it was the Frankfurt Auto Show, and there was a Chinese manufacturer there, their first time at a major international auto show. And I stepped inside their car and it was overpowering. It was a whole lot of plastic and adhesive smell. And they said at the time that the typical Chinese new car shopper really liked a pungent new car smell. They wanted to be stronger than you might get in Europe or US or other markets. And they wanted it to last longer. That's completely changed now. The Chinese market, more than any others, air pollution being an issue. Yeah. Also, COVID, that new car smell is kind of seen as more of a pollutant. Tastes evolve, you know, but from my perspective and my research, that no new car smell for many car shoppers in China is the best kind of new car smell, that it's done a complete turnaround. And again, let's even round way up to 20 years. That's pretty dramatic, that new car smells is seen by some as a thing to avoid, that it's unhealthy and whatnot. So it'll be interesting to see if that stays put, if it transforms to other markets. But I don't know. I think for the vast majority of people, at least in the US market, that new car smell is something positive, even though they mask it many times with little pine trees dangling from a rearview mirror.
Totally. It's funny because actually when you think about it, it is possible that within our lifetime, you and me, new car smell is a lost smell.
It's possible. And again, you know, having not I'm dating myself too much and saying I was around when the Model T was new, but car technology evolves, what's used in them evolves, you know, paint, plastics, leather, vinyl, it changes. And yeah, it's especially with more sustainable materials, probably less of that petroleum off-gassing. It's certainly within the realm of possibility that new car smell will become as quaint as hand cranking your engine, you know, maybe.
I can't even imagine.
I've tried it. It's horrible. I couldn't do it.
I like the button you press and then it's on.
That was Nick Kurczewski joining us from New Jersey. Learn more about Nick on our website, where we posted a link to his fascinating article about new car smell. For our next and final guest, I invited someone special, almost legendary, in the perfume industry. And that someone is David Seth Moltz, otherwise known as one half of the fabled perfume duo known as Dies and Durga. Not too long ago, Dies and Durga started a line of auto fragrances with offerings like 85 Diesel, Portable Fireplace, Big Sur After Rain, and many more. I was curious, so I asked David if he would kindly join me for a chat. He said yes, and well, here he is.
I asked you to be on the show because you guys have this amazing auto fragrance line. And I kind of wanted to ask you why you decided to start that.
To me, it was such low hanging fruit. I was like, you know, somewhere and I was like, why does no one make the cheap car auto fragrances and just like do it well with good fragrances? I remember like let me check out like what's out there. And I went to like the gas station, you know, and I got everything that they had. Honestly, this is a true story. I'm alone in my car and like I open one to smell it. And I'm not joking. I had to pull over, double park and take it and throw them out like in the trash can because I couldn't be in the car with them.
Wow.
You have those fancy ones that are in like, you know, generally, I don't know, like shishi, like I don't like the look of it, like a thing you plug in and then it just seems so cumbersome and doesn't look cool. I was like, why can't we just get like the actual thing that hangs? And we found a place that could do it for us, you know, and there's a little bit more testing that goes into it than some other products because like it has to pass certain like stability things and like how, and the performance and its absorption. So you have to really test each one, but you know, you have to burn test every candle anyway. So.
Yeah, fair. I mean, so, but you were saying, so you tried all this stuff on the market and there was, the smell wasn't obviously great, but also you touched very briefly on design, on looking cool. And that's, I guess that's something that I hadn't thought about, but there is a factor of aesthetics that plays into it visually as well. So
I'm very into highbrow, lowbrow. Right. I think I hate midbrow, right? So those plug-in air fresheners, those are so like midbrow, you know, it's like trying to look fancy, but it's terrible. But like the lowbrowness, like I love like how a can of soda looks, or just, you know, the trees that you put in your car, not that shape, but the thing that hangs, it's such a low impact, easy thing.
Yeah.
It's a piece of paper that you can use for so many different things, you know, rather than buying into some like system that needs to be refilled. And
right. What you are touching on is the fact that auto scenting is one of those things that maybe people who aren't into perfume are likely to buy some sort of smell for their car.
Yeah.
It's very populist. I don't know what the word is.
Egalitarian.
Thank you.
I agree. I love making stuff for everyone. I'm not the kind of person that just wants to make something for like only one group of people, or like I'm an artist and I don't care what people think.
Yeah.
I'd love to make something for everyone.
So from a technical perspective, when you're designing for scent, which you obviously do at DS and Durga, and when you're designing for candles and when you're designing for car fragrance, there's a different process in terms of testing and stability. Mm. Could you just explain a little bit what's the difference?
So, well, because our auto fragrances all come from candles. The problem with candles, and this is why so many candles I don't like, the perceived value of a perfume is infinite. You could be like, oh, this is a $10,000 thing because it has, you know, this oud that I can only get from X, Y, and Z. And it's the purest art form of fragrance. Whereas like a candle is fighting through the burning of wax and like literally the chemical process of all this crap happening. So it's like a war compared to this pure fragrance thing. But a candle probably has three times more oil on average than a perfume, and the perceived value is very finite. Mm-hmm. Suffice to say, candles are really expensive to make and the margin is terrible. We have to sell stuff to distributors at a reduced margin so they can sell it to a store. It's very, very hard to make any money on it. So why go through all the work and all the people's times to make it happen? One of the secrets of our candles is the oils just cost too much and I don't give a
right. You just do it anyway.
We don't make a lot of money on them because I want them to smell good. I'm not going to just make something like cheap and easy and strong, but there is more of a cost awareness. I can't just put in, you know, a ton of expensive floral absolutes into a candle because it wouldn't make sense, right, you know, for a $65 candle. So cost is part of it, but there are also things that the flashpoint is super low or flashpoint is super high and they will mess up your flame. And it's a whole science of figuring out how your thing works. And you just have to test it every time and then sometimes change the wicks, or you have to go back. I've had to go back and mod formulas. Mm-hmm. I've had candles fail the absorption rate for the air fresheners. And so like we just couldn't come out with that SKU because like it didn't really work unless I went back and modded it. And I was like, it's not really worth it.
So just for people who don't know, flashpoint is the point at which a material ignites. And what's absorption rate?
Absorption rate is how fast it gets into the blotter card that is the auto fragrance.
I see. So then the translation from candle to auto fragrance is obviously, there's a lot of testing that goes on.
Yeah.
And what factors are you thinking about? Like how long it lasts in the car, you know?
How long it lasts in general, but the absorption is important, right? Because some things fail absorption, meaning if you were to touch it, it would be like really oily.
Oh, right. Okay.
And then the other thing is the stability. It's white paper, so it will turn yellowish after a while. But I am the type of person that does not care about that. Even in our fragrance, sometimes chemical reactions happen and like things will turn, you know, brown depending on, and I've always just said, I don't care because it's a naturally occurring process of aging to me and it's totally fine. It doesn't affect the fragrance at all.
Yeah.
So one of the scents is called 85 Diesel. And I'm really excited about this because this is my favorite car, okay? Which is the...
Is it really?
Yeah, the 85 Mercedes 300 CB. Oh. I mean, I like that whole line.
To Kavi and I, it really represented something. So we live in New York and didn't have a car. And then she got pregnant and, you know, we knew we needed to have a car. So we were like, oh, what should we get? And we met someone in Queens to look at their like crappy modern looking Hyundai,
oh, yeah.
But it was like the safe choice. That's a great car with like good this and everything. And, you know, it was just like, all right, this is what we have to do because like, you know, we need to get the car. And then we saw on Craigslist for $9,000, which I think was less than the Hyundai. There was this 85 diesel. And we drove up to Connecticut and looked at it. The guy was a cop and a mechanic.
Whoa.
And this had been his father-in-law's who had kept it in the garage. It had like 70,000 miles on it. And you got in there and it's, you know, I don't know if people know that like, you know, when you press the gas, it's like super slow until it starts going. And it feels like you're driving a boat. It's meant to only drive in a straight line. There's like no handling. You could like drive through a wall. It's like a tank. We were young and we're like, dude, let's just do this. Let's take like the harder road. You know, having that car in the winter in New York is not awesome because it cannot turn on sometimes because it's not spark plugs, it's glow plugs.
Got it.
And it has a very specific smell. And I realized, I learned one of the reasons why is, you know, it looks like it's leather seats, but what it is this thing called vinylite, I think. And it's been outlawed because it's horribly flammable, but it smells like melting plastic. And oh, the other thing is I grew up, I was born in 1980 and the woman around the corner from us would drive us to school sometimes. And she had an old diesel Benz. Back then it meant you were like fancy and rich. And like my parents could never afford it. We drove like Hondas, you know? And so it was this full circle to become an adult and be able to buy that old status symbol that no longer was a status symbol and was relatively cheap for a used car.
Totally.
But I remembered that smell and it instantly brings you back to like 85. And, you know, in the 80s, we would just like be driven around. Like our parents would like drive up the coast on the weekend and they'd be shirts, clothes that looked like rugs, like, you know, like yellow, orange, white, brown, super ugly clothes that looked like rugs, listening to Fleetwood Mac and like legend Bob Marley. So I was like, oh, wow. So we need to make a candle that smells like this. Exactly. And it's, you know, it has a little poisonous diesel fumes coming out at you like every once in a while, but it mostly smells like this vinylite that is like plasticky, saffrony leather.
I love it. You know, I'm also from the US. I was born around the same time as you. And there is something about the mythology of the car in America, especially, you know, 70s, 80s, before things got complicated with gas and all that, you know, I don't know. It's just something very uniquely, you know.
Well, I think the reason is highways, right? So the main difference between our country is that they, you know, they did the checkerboard thing to screw over the train companies so they could build these roads and, you know, make a ton of money in that way. So we were the first real like driving country with, I mean, obviously the car was invented here, but the highways made this great American myth. I was also in a band for like 10 years and we went on tour all the time. And so I lived in like a 18 passenger van.
Oh, wow.
I've been everywhere and seen all the highways. And sometimes I think it's hard to truly understand America if you've never driven across it.
Yeah.
It's so much bigger than you think. From Chicago to Colorado, it is 3 days of flat, you know, and like all different kinds of cultures. And there's so much going on.
But yeah. I mean, that's sort of why I wanted to do a radio show about cars is because, like, I mean, for instance, your perfume, or I should say your multi-product smell, Big Sur After the Rain, explores a place, which is Big Sur, that is really only realistically reachable by car now. You know what I mean? So there's something about America, and it, you know, harkens to Kerouac and all that, and cars.
There's something like mystical happening down there with like Black Rock poets and all that stuff. The other thing is that Highway 1 is, if not the, it's definitely the top five most beautiful drives in America. By the way, there's incredible coastal stuff all around the Mediterranean, Scotland, but Highway 1 might be America's most legendary drive. When you go down over all those bridges and then you stop on the side of the road, we stopped at some place and we went for like a walk, but we went into a grove. The whole floor is littered with eucalyptus. So you like pick it up and it's like dried brown spears, you know, that like you can crush. It's the best smell. But there is fresh green shoots coming off the plants. We think of eucalyptus as very like spa medicinal and stuff, But it is one of, in nature, one of my very favorite smells. It is so sinewy and fresh and has like a snarling fragrance that just keeps like turning and turning.
Yeah.
I love making very realistic fragrances and using copious amounts of ozones to make it feel like you're actually like standing by the ocean or something. So Big Tear After Rain, it's really got that scent of that grove that like we walked through.
That was perfumer David Seth Moltz, one half of DS and Durga. You can learn more about his work at dsanddurga.com. And that was our show. I hope this little meditation on cars brought some new perspective about those metal beasts. I'm still probably not going to buy my Mercedes-Benz Pagoda, but at least I feel immersed in the culture. We'll be back with another episode in a couple weeks with an interview with the amazing Christopher Brocious from CB I Hate Perfume. Perfume on the Radio is a radio show and podcast produced and presented by the Institute for Art and Olfaction, a nonprofit organization devoted to experimentation and access in the field of perfumery. If you like what we do, please don't forget to rate and review us so we can continue to bring you this, we think, pretty cool monthly hour of audio. My name is Saskia Wilson-Brown, and I've enjoyed hosting this episode, as always. We'll release another show in a few weeks, and until then, friends, keep it kind, keep it real, and keep it smelly.
Perfume on the radio. This is Perfume on the Radio on Lookout FM. This is Perfume on the Radio. Tune in to just a stereo. This is Perfume on the Radio on Lookout FM. This is Perfume on the Radio. Tune in to just a stereo. This is Perfume on the Radio on Lookout FM.
You're listening to Perfume on the Radio on Lookout FM.